Of course, many millions of Americans stayed up very late on Tuesday night and into Wednesday morning, awaiting word as to who would be elected president of the United States. People around the world were equally interested in many places. Today, we get some reaction from Europe. Joining us from London is John Micklethwaite, the U.S. editor for The Economist magazine, co-author of The Right Nation, Conservative Power in America. And John, good of you to come back on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you for having me.
What was the reaction in Britain? Of course, Prime Minister Blair, President Bush's closest international ally, and of course, the most important ally in Iraq.
Well, it's a mixture between the official reaction, which, needless to say, has been sort of polite, and Blair sent him a note, just as actually rather interestingly Jacques Chirac sent him a note, rather agreeably beginning, "Dear Georges, I fully expected all this and not remotely hoping that it wouldn't happen." But the reaction on the streets, or at least certainly from what one can tell, is something a little bit more horrific, I think. I think people somehow expected at the end Kerry to win, or they were desperately hoping it. A good example is The Guardian, a famously left-of-centre paper across here, whose middle supplement just has an almost black page with a small thing in the middle saying, "Oh God," and has a long article about the Bush blues. And my personal feeling on it is that it's something to do with the fact that most Britons and Europeans have been brought up on a relentless diet of Michael Moore books and things like that. And so they've grown up with the idea that the Bush's victory was something of a coup, something of a strange thing to do with sort of Texans somehow sneaking into power, rather than anything to do with at least one part of America. So suddenly the idea that a lot of Americans might actually be rather conservative has taken them somewhat by surprise.
It's interesting. There were three world leaders who took considerable political risks in Iraq. Of course, President Bush. It was Prime Minister John Howard in Australia. They have both been reelected. Prime Minister Blair faces reelection, what, next spring?
Yes, I think Blair would probably have the easiest task out of the three of them, to the extent, not that the Iraq war is popular in Britain, that the opposition is in a fairly kind of fearful state, and the economy here has been a lot better, actually, than America recently. And so most people approve the general way in which Blair has been running the country. By contrast, Bush, you know, really was running quite a hard fight with both a lousy war and a slightly difficult economy. The other example of somebody who didn't really survive, of course, was Aznar, although that's another
yes, and that also the unfortunate incident in Madrid with the bombings just a couple of days before the elections there.
Yes, I should stress, Aznar himself was retiring. It was his successor who got into trouble.
Of course. What about what we used to call the continent? You mentioned Jacques Chirac sending a note to President Bush, "Dear Georges." But the impression we're getting today, again, at least officially, is, well, this is a new opportunity. Let bygones be bygones.
I think there's something in that. I mean, basically what seems to be happening at the moment is that Europeans, as I said slightly, are waking up with sort of terror to the idea that America might really be like the way they've always feared. But actually, I think in some ways they're now going too far in the wrong direction. I think actually, in some ways, there is a genuine opportunity. I think from Bush's point of view, it's totally obvious he does need more help abroad than the help he's managed to get so far. And from the European point of view, I think there's a sort of rather simplistic point, is that they all sat there, certainly the leaders of France, Germany, and the main continental European countries, they all sat there hoping for Bush to be defeated and for Kerry to come in. Now it's perfectly obvious that hasn't happened. They've got Bush for another 4 years. And so I think you could argue there'd be a general Gallic shrug, and we must get on this and start doing some pragmatic horse trading about things that either side wants.
We know we have listeners in Europe. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at +1 202 408 7544. Again, +1 202 408 7544. And of course, 800-989-8255 for those of you in this country. John Micklethwaite, President Bush, certainly his minority president, I think Europeans would have understood the terminology that way when he was elected the first time, did not get the plurality of the popular vote. He did better this time. Is this being seen as a mandate for President Bush?
I think it is. I mean, I've always thought that Europeans are in a strange sort of way a bit like Pauline Kael, the famous New Yorker film critic who back in 1972 reacted with horror and said she couldn't believe that Richard Nixon got elected. She didn't know anyone who'd voted for him. And I think, to be basic about it, Europeans don't know very much about the sort of conservative America which has elected George W. Bush, what we call the right nation, that bit in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
They don't visit. And so it's a sort of different part of America to them. They don't understand how this election's come about. And so they're suddenly rather interested by it and trying to work out what has happened. And I think that is where the sort of Michael Moore stuff comes in, because they had been led to believe that Bush had got through by some terrible series of accidents involving Florida and shenanigans. And that has been pretty much the sort of diet they've been brought up on, rightly or wrongly. And so trying to get used to the idea that he might represent something real, for better or worse, in America is hard for them.
We've been talking thus far about what Donald Rumsfeld might describe as the old Europe. What about the new Europe, the new countries in Eastern and Central Europe?
Well, there is a tiny bit more evidence of Bush philia there. I mean, if there was some polls done before the election, and those were amazing to the extent that I think if you looked even at the most Democratic states in America, you still found Bush getting 20-30% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, you found Bush getting, I think, 15% of the vote in Britain and declining rapidly thereafter in places like Germany and France. He did, however, do quite well in a few countries like Poland and some of the newer bits of Europe. So to that extent, I think Rumsfeld's jibe about New Europe, that there was an element of truth in it. But I think the real difference is to the people of Eastern Europe, it's just purely, I think, love of America. America is the place they look to when they were hidden behind the Berlin Wall, and it was the place which they saw as liberating them. That feeling has slightly gone by in France and Germany, I think.
Mm. We're speaking with John Micklethwaite, the U.S. editor for The Economist. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And there is another factor that we have to add in and ask you about as well. During the election campaign, Vladimir Putin of Russia virtually endorsed George Bush and called for his election, that despite some tensions between the two world leaders.
Yes, it's a sort of odd relationship, the Putin-Bush one. They share this common one big thing, which is the sort of centrality to both of them of the war on terror. I think I have to say, and this would just be an objective judgment rather than a subjective one, I think Putin's war on terror is a somewhat nastier being than Bush's one. And Bush's one, for better or worse, is trying to spread democracy throughout the Middle East and things like that. I think in Chechnya, it's a much more territorial type of vision of what Putin has, but nevertheless he has pushed his way of ruling behind that, and so there is a sort of form of alliance there, but it doesn't necessarily go down well with the other bits of Europe.
Let's get a listener involved in the conversation, and Paul joins us now. Good of you to call in, Paul.
Thank you. I'm wondering how the new EU constitution that has been passed, or they're trying to ratify now, is going to work with this new neoconservative government.
Well, that's an interesting question. There are certainly parts of the conservative movement in America, the more kind of internationalist parts of them, who are rather interested by this, and they amongst the British Eurosceptic right, you often meet people who talk about having been to the American Enterprise
right.
Institute and having talked to people there about ways in which to sort of scuttle the federal project of Europe. So there is definitely an element on the right in America who are interested in trying to sort of break it up a bit.
Do you think there is a strong
free trading side inside Britain, which is also suspicious of great kind of European central projects?
Hmm.
I don't think fundamentally the main people around Bush are sufficiently interested by the European constitution and stuff like that to do very much about it. I think they view it as Europe's own sort of backyard problem.
There was a story on
this would certainly be on the less Brussels side.
John Micklethwaite, there was a story today that Norway, which has been extremely EU skeptical, in fact, I think has rebuffed membership twice, may reconsider as a result, to some degree, of the re-election of President Bush.
I saw something about that. I have to admit, I couldn't see any immediate link between the two. It struck me as a rather strange reaction. President Bush gets elected, why don't we join the European Union? I mean, there's not an immediate connection as far as I can see, but one can never tell what other countries have in it.
Paul, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Here's an email we got from Thomas Epler in New York. I've been wondering since Tuesday evening, as the returns were coming in and whole states on TV were turning red or blue, whether Europeans realize that almost half the population of many of the red states voted for Kerry. I'm afraid that the wide swath of red on the final electoral map, in which no doubt appeared in the European media, seems to show a misconception of the truth that red and blue states were divided in their support for the presidential candidates.
There's been an element of that. If you look at the maps, the papers have been relatively sophisticated about that, to the extent that they've often shown maps by county as well as by state. So that's come through. The interesting thing to me, rather strangely, was if you watched the British television channels, a variety of American pundits appeared on them before the polls had closed in Europe, closed in America.
Mm-hmm.
And very much pushed the line at the time that Kerry was bound to win. I think with actually having, I had to watch both American television and European television at that time, that people were somewhat less restrained in Europe. So I think most Europeans went to bed expecting Kerry to win.
That was on the basis of exit polls, which later turned out to be wrong.
Exactly.
This was more of a shock, perhaps, as Europeans woke up the next morning.
I think it was, and given that the fact that they have, I think, probably even less understood the Bush presidency than some bits of the liberal states in America, it was more of a shock, I think, in that way.
John Micklethwaite, we appreciate it always for your appearance.
Thank you very much for having me.
John Micklethwaite is the U.S. editor for The Economist magazine. He's most recently the author of The Right Nation, Conservative Power in America, and he was kind enough to stay up and join us on the line from London. Tomorrow, Ira Flatow's here. It's Science Friday. We'll see you Monday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.